that we acknowledge that the transition period, not to say what transition period, but a transition period was essential to make it work. That's where the tension is. We've got this extreme health burden, but we also can't just immediately make folks change without any support. So I want that to be attended to. And then my last point is that the pattern that we're establishing here should be the pattern for mitigation of climate change. If we are going to help finance and insist on reduction in emissions over time from the public sector and the private sector, there's a pattern that you're starting here that's very important. And I hope that in this process, there's some iteration and learning and adjustment as you go. That's all of my comment. I'm in support of this ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman.
I just wanted to take this opportunity publicly to thank Kevin Downing for a very long, distinguished career at the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, and in particular around diesel emissions. He has, I think as Mr. Whitman said, he is a subject matter expert in this field. And I remember early on in my career here at City Hall working with Kevin to get some federal monies to help us reduce diesel emissions on some of our Bureau of Environmental Service contract work that was going on. So I just wanted to thank you for all your service to our state and to our city. And I do want to ask you both a question, too, because I think, Mr. Goodfoot, you just hit on something that was nagging at me throughout the presentations, is the workers who are being exposed to diesel emissions day in and day out. And I know DEQ isn't the right agency. It's Oregon OSHA. But do we have any standards that protect people who work around diesel or diesel mechanics, construction operators? Is there anything like that? And should there be?
Not to my knowledge, but I can't say for certain.
Yeah. Okay.
But one of the places that we saw as a gap in our study was the need for OSHA to be involved.
Okay. Commissioner Fritz.
Would you care to comment on whether we should exempt affordable housing projects with that in mind, with the construction workers in mind?
Tight balance between the urgency of the need and the transition. I think we want to protect everybody. We need to commit resources to make that go faster.
I did get some additional information with regard to the affordable housing, and that is they just didn't have enough data by today to be able to put that in. The margins are very slim for those who develop affordable housing. So my understanding is they're going to collect data and come back to us, and then presumably the county. Amanda, is that in July that they're targeting?
Yeah, it's in the ordinance for July. But in the meantime, it says that they're exempt. Well, nothing's going to happen before July, so why would we say in the ordinance that they're exempt, in the resolution that they're exempt, rather than just that they're going to come back with those results? Why would we make the decision that they're going to be exempt before we have the information about whether they should be?
Amanda, did you want to come up and comment on that? Please, just do it on the record. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah,
you
we appreciate it. Before Mr. Downing goes, yeah. I had a question.
Sure, please, Commissioner Fish.
Well, Amanda first.
Okay, thank you. So the decision...
Name for the record,
My name is Amanda Watson. I am a policy advisor in the mayor's office. The decision to exempt upfront, even though the phase-in policy, as you rightfully pointed out, Commissioner, doesn't go into place in 2020, was based on a precedent of the... green building policy, which allowed PHB kind of the separate set of rules to meet the same objectives of the policy based on the different structure of PHB projects. And additionally, as Kyle mentioned in his presentation, there's the question of the Metro bond and that as well. And so if we are looking at, you know, this particular policy only applies to procurement, right? And so not city-invested projects, and the Metro bond is a separate question. And so this analysis would look at both together. And the idea was that we could make a decision on the both and bring them forward at the same time.
I agree.
Yes.
But then there's no need to exempt them now. Let's have that discussion and decide at that time whether to exempt them rather than actively putting them. We're making a decision without that information.
Sure. I mean, I'll leave that, obviously, to council to decide. I think the idea was that, you know, given that affordable housing is such a strong priority for the city, and we wanted to send the signal that we're making a responsible decision there. But I will leave that up to all of you folks to deliberate.
So before we lose the panel, I just wanted, I couldn't resist asking the following question. So our focus today is largely on mitigating the impact of diesel fumes. And I guess given that we've learned about the magnitude of the public health problem, we've learned about the disparate impact on protected classes, and we've learned about the catastrophic impact on global warming, and we also know that the market is developing alternatives, at what point, either because of shifting law and liability or public policy or market forces or whatever you'd like to identify, does this problem in part get solved by moving away from diesel to renewable energy, even things like renewable natural gas, which I understand is an improvement? At what point do you forecast that the whole paradigm shifts?
Well, in the future, no. So EPA, let's say I'm trying to top my head. So when EPA adopted their regulation in 2000 for the 2007 trucks standard, they modeled that by 2030, 97% of the trips traveled by heavy-duty trucks would be by 2007 compliant engines. What they did not take into account, and they also did the same kind of forecast for the non-road rule they adopted in 2007, I think it was. Both of this, interesting enough, during the Bush administration, George W. Bush's administration. That was its projection, I think, of 75% of the equipment will be clean, Tier 4, by 2030 as well. So what that doesn't take into account is the fact that there's been the Great Recession, there's been several economic turndowns in the meantime, and they're modeling for both the highway and the non-highway side assumed that the turnover nationally would be 10% in both of those fleets every year. So 10% of the highway fleet, 10% of the non-road fleet will be turning over every year post the adoption of those rules. We don't know yet, and we'll be anxious to see the results from the survey work that is going on right now on the non-road side. But on the highway side, the registration data from ODOT suggests that the turnover there is somewhere between 4 to 6% per year. So the projection that we've had so far about the benefits from the new technology is way off because the turnover in the fleets is much slower, at least in this state, than what EPA had projected originally. So in terms of when that would happen, I don't know. Anecdotally, I can tell you that I was involved in a project where we offered 25% towards the cost of replacing some dump trucks. The company was very gracious, and they wanted more than what I was able to offer. They kept coming back and saying, "Oh, yeah, we want to do some more trucks." But he also pointed out that despite this new trucks that he also has a 1968 truck, dump truck, that he runs, that he loves, and would not give up because it's cheaper to operate, is not repaired as often as the newer trucks. So there's a large investment that people have, both emotionally and financially, in keeping some of this old technology going for a long time. So not a very definitive answer, but longer, I think, than the 2030 time frame than what EPA projected, for sure.
Thank you.
If I may just add, from our work with a fuel cell manufacturer from Vancouver, B.C., and market development work we did for them, I'm under the impression that the U.S. OEMs in the heavy-duty market are not going to move, and they've retuned their strategy to sell just to China, which has made a 5-year national effort to dedicate towards electrification of the heavy-duty fleet nationally. So I think we're going to see this technology come in from China quickly. And we're seeing electric special purpose engines already, like lawnmowers and those kinds of things. But it's anybody's guess as to when they all arrive. But they're coming in fits and starts in every category that I can find.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Now we are on to the public testimony part of the day. People who have disabilities or people with children, we always encourage you to let the clerk know, and we'll move you up in the line. I think we only have about nine people. 3 minutes. Name for the record, please. Carla, the first three.
The first four have asked to come up together. Bevan Burns, Ari Mitchell, Rosie Lyons, and Charlie Backus.
Welcome. Thank you for being here. And the microphones slide closer, about this much distance is about right. Thanks. Good afternoon.
Hi. Thank you for having us. My name is Bevan Burns. I'm a lifetime Portland resident, where I'm raising my four daughters. I'm also the principal of Bridges Middle School here in downtown Portland, a nonprofit school serving students with learning differences. I'm also a volunteer coordinator with Portland Neighbors for Diesel Action. And I'm here today to offer my support, but also ask that you do more. Moving forward with this standard is a very important step, and it represents a great deal of work by the staff of the Bureau of Sustainability and many others, for which we are very grateful. We appreciate the care you've given to this step. We are disappointed that it's not as strong and will not be as effective as it needs to be. We have submitted formal comments with our concerns. Boiling down our comments, we hope you will consider four changes. We'd like to see the proposal broadened to include public-funded construction sites. That includes affordable housing. We'd like to shorten the phase-in period to 3 years for at least 60% reduction and 4 years for at least 80% reduction in diesel emissions. We'd also like to strengthen the filtration requirements for the older diesels to not grandfather DOC filters beyond 2024. And lastly, we think it's imperative that you provide specific funding for the program and for substantial assistance to those disadvantaged minority and women-owned contractors in meeting these stronger requirements. Ultimately, a stronger version could have a positive leveraging effect on the diesel equipment and practices used on private construction sites. It may also be a model for other Oregon cities and counties, and eventually for the state's own infrastructure programs. As you know, on November 6th this year, metro area voters approved $652 million in general obligation bond to create affordable housing for approximately 12,000 residents. These funds will create quite a bit of city-funded construction sites. And we already know that communities hit hardest by diesel pollution are those of low income, people of color, people with disabilities, and seniors with significant health concerns, because they are already concentrated near freeways where they're bearing the biggest burden of this pollution. By leaving affordable housing projects out of this standard, we are only furthering the difference of how we are treating our citizens and how we are caring for their health and impacting the problem even greater. I emphasize that this is an important step. But by leaving affordable housing out, we are leaving our most vulnerable and underrepresented communities breathing city-funded toxic air. It sets a precedent. This standard will set a precedent for other cities and counties in Oregon, and for the state itself, it should not be a weak and tentative effort. It should lead directly to strong and effective statewide regulation of diesels following the California model. I thank you for your consideration and leadership on this issue. It's very important to all of us.
Thank you.
Ari. Hi, my name is Ari Mitchell. I'm a sixth grade student at Bridges Middle School in downtown Portland. This year I've been taking a class at school to learn about diesel pollution and its harmful effects on our health. We even built our own diesel particulate sensors and actively gathering pollution data at locations throughout the city. In my class, I learned that DEQ reported in 2015 that diesel exhaust causes lung and bladder cancer, certain heart attacks, and other blood diseases. Childhood brain tumors decrease brain functioning and increase cases of ALS, bronchitis, and asthma. Another study I read found diesel pollution causes dementia and Alzheimer's disease. Diesel pollution is dangerous. Actually, diesel pollution kills. In fact, 460 people die a year in Oregon because of diesel pollution-related causes. That's as many people a year die in a car accident in Oregon. That's scary. I'm here today to thank you for your efforts on this important issue and ask you to please do more. 7 years is far too long for this important standard to take full effect. I will be 18 years old by then, and my lungs will pay the price. I respectfully ask you to please shorten the the phase and period to 3 years for 60% reduction and 4 years for 80% reduction in diesel emissions. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. There you go. Perfect. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Rosie Lyons. I am a 7th grade student at Bridges Middle School. In my environmental justice class this year, I was shocked to learn that Portland has some of the worst diesel-polluted air in the United States, and that in Portland, people with lower incomes are breathing the worst air of any of us because they are more likely to live in neighborhoods near freeways. We learned that 65% of the diesel pollution in our city comes from old equipment at construction sites. We have also learned about the efforts of our city and county to work together to address this pollution at construction sites. I'm here today to thank you for your efforts and ask that you please do more. You must include public-funded projects or you will leave our most underserved communities breathing toxic air. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Appreciate your being here.
Hi, my name is Charlie Backus, and I'm a 6th grade student at Bridges Middle School. This year, I've been taking a class at school to learn about diesel pollution in Portland and what we can do about it. I've learned about the diesel pollution caused by diesel trucks in our health and the climate. I'm amazed that the cost of the pollution in Oregon are more than $3 billion a year. I understand that the City Council and the City Country Commission and are voting today as a resolution to begin to reduce diesel and pollution on public construction sites. I'm here today to thank you for your work on this. It is an important step, but a much too small step. As you make a vote today, I hope you will approve of this resolution with a shorter phase-in schedule and broaden it all to include all city-funded construction sites. I thank you for your consideration, and I ask you all to remember that the health of us and our planet are at stake. More needs to be done, and soon.
Thank you. Excellent testimony. Appreciate it.
The next three are Don Stevens, Tori Cole, and Mary Pavito.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being here. Would you like to go ahead and start?
Sure.
Thank you.
My name's Tori Cole. I'm an attorney. Hello. Okay. I'm an attorney and program director at Neighbors for Clean Air. And so, first of all, I would just like to start off by thanking our local government for stepping up to address this issue, especially in the wake of the lack of progress we've seen on diesel at the state level, despite our best efforts. So as you've heard many people talk about today, the data that we have shows us that Multnomah County is in the 96th percentile for diesel emissions in the nation. We have the health outcomes to show for it in terms of particularly respiratory-related ER visits being really high in our county. And as some of our last folks who testified mentioned, 65% of these emissions comes from construction activity. Our city is a very desirable place to live in a lot of ways, and many Portlanders will continue to live in a state of constant construction for the foreseeable future. The Metro Affordable Housing Bond that passed ensures that we'll be building $652.8 million of affordable housing in the very same environmental justice communities that have been disproportionately impacted by diesel emissions. And I believe they deserve better than to be continuing to be poisoned just to have access to affordable housing. These communities not only suffer disproportionately from diesel pollution, but from the cumulative impact of all the pollutants from air toxics in our air. So I think it's very important that the city and the county are showing leadership on this issue, and I thank you for that. We really hope this is just the beginning. The scale of this problem requires more from us, especially with this policy's 7-year phase-in timeline. In particular, we would like to see funding on the table for low-income minority and women-owned contractors to incentivize quick retrofits and replacement of older engines to make this policy a success. We would also love to see these standards apply wherever public money is being spent. So again, I thank you for prioritizing clean air for Portland residents, and we hope to continue to work with you to lower emissions and promote better health outcomes for our community. Thanks.
Very good. Thank you for being here.
I'm Don Stevens. I live in Brooklyn neighborhood near Brooklyn Yards. I'm a board member of the Neighborhood Association. I'm also a member of the Coalition of Neighborhoods that are, we call ourselves the Portland Neighbors for Diesel Action. I'm presenting today a copy of the resolution that the Neighborhood Board has passed in support of the resolution, and I'll just read it. We are pleased that the city is taking steps to reduce the dangerous emissions from diesel equipment used by contractors for city projects. The health hazards posed by diesel emissions has been known for more than 20 years, and in view of the inability of the state legislature to pass meaningful regulations, we welcome this small but important step by the city to reduce these emissions, if only for construction equipment. However, we are concerned that the timetable for implementation of gradually more restrictive standards is too slow, allowing 7 years to reach the state-of-the-art emission controls that are already more than 10 years old. The policy proposal also provides for many exemptions that allow contractors to use older polluting equipment for up to an additional 7 years. We urge you to shorten the timetable by 2 to 3 years. We support the provisions for the Oregon state certified DMW ESB firms. In view of the complex allowances for older equipment, we urge that a budget be allocated for inspection and enforcement, if not actual monitoring of air quality near construction sites. We feel an additional benefit of strong diesel emission standards enacted by the city can serve as a model for other jurisdictions to emulate for construction as well as on-road diesel emissions. These pose the greatest threat to health at an annual cost to the state of $3.5 billion, according to the DEQ. The amendment to reduce emissions of construction activities will benefit our health as proposed, but can be strengthened to be even more protective.
Thank you for your testimony. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mary Pivato, Neighbors for Clean Air. And thank you, Mayor Wheeler, and all of the commissioners today for this opportunity, because I am really excited to be here to be able to testify in support of a really important ordinance that the city is taking up. And I really appreciate that. As Tori mentioned, and she is here also with Neighbors for Clean Air, and she did mention some of the specific concerns that we have regarding timing and certainly the exemption on public housing. I think the spirit of this ordinance is that when we use public money and public funds, which I take some ownership over, you know, that these come from, that they should also support public health. And so I do believe that with the unprecedented investment in affordable housing, which is a really important initiative for our region, that it would also, though, support clean diesel contracting. And I would really support Commissioner Fritz's effort to remove exemption at this point. I was under the impression that the discussion will be moved later. I felt like that was job security as an advocate. And we will obviously be very concerned in watching that conversation. But if there's anything in the word exemption today that would make create a bigger barrier for that conversation down the road, I do appreciate Commissioner Fritz flagging that. And I appreciate Commissioner Udaly's demonstration that this is not a new problem, but the urgency is new. I think that the urgency of the information we're getting on our climate is that cities and counties and local governments have to act. And I will say, I had the honor of being appointed to US EPA's Clean Air Advisory Committee in the last hours of the Obama administration, and I've served on that committee. And honestly, I think our federal government, our federal EPA, is leaving no stone unturned right now to undo any protections we have, even as the information gets worse and worse about the urgency. So these kinds of local initiatives, and that's why I'm here to strongly support you moving forward with something with some limitations. And I would also like to encourage and ask that we really work together with state government. I think in this situation, we really need to be additive. We really need to be able to have city and local governments taking action where the state has some limitations. And around the VW settlement money is a really good example. We need to ensure that that money is protected and held to go into the investments in the areas of our state, which really are the Portland metro region, where it's impacted the most people for the longest period of time. And so we really need to work together, I think, with state government to ensure that no unnecessary rails are put on that money that would restrict its investment where it's most needed. And I think that there are some opportunities to make sure that that is. And I encourage and look forward to working with the city hand in hand as we work with the state legislature moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. As our community experts, I'm still stuck on the 5 minutes idling on the construction machines. Is there technology out there that could, even after 5 minutes, shut them off rather than just have a sticker on them telling them to shut them off?
Commissioner Fritz, I think that's an excellent question. I believe in market forces, so I believe there's always technology when a limitation is put in place, that is the way we get technology. I do also understand what Kevin Downing has explained regarding the operation of the vehicles. One of the biggest issues around idling, frankly, is the fact that we allowed our state government to pass a preemption on idling in our region that I think is as much problematic as the number of minutes we ascribe to it. Because we should be allowed, I think, as local government to address idling in how we need to meet the needs and the risk that we experience here. And I think that it's a really important effort at the state government to lift that preemption on idling in general as much as it is to address the minutes. But I do believe that if we start signaling that we are going to look for stricter idling rules, that's when the market starts and technology starts to drive and get there. And I would have to defer to Kevin on his expertise of really understanding the operation of these engines and the conditions that they work under. And I have respected that over the years with his support for 5 minute idling. But I'm more concerned about the preemption that the state has imposed that doesn't allow us to address idling more generally for the Portland metro region.
What does it preempt us from doing?
Setting a standard stricter than the state's.
And the state's is 5 minutes?
Among other things, it preempts a whole bunch of areas that we could address idling more effectively in the Portland metro area holistically.
I'm hearing a request to add that to our legislative agenda, which we'll be taking up next week.
Yes.
So thank you for that.
Thank you.
I know that TriMet has recently started having a rest stop outside my office window. And they have a 3 minute idling policy. However, 3 minutes tends to go to three and a half, 4 minutes. You know, at what point despite the hermetically sealed city hall, it does seep in through our windows and is certainly very loud and noisy. So that's very helpful information. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you all for your testimony.
May
Commissioner
I have a
Fish.
Question of staff.
You bet. Oh, thank you.
Are we done with this?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
We have two more for testimony.
If you'd like the staff come on
more?
Up. Yeah, do you want to wait till after the testimony?
I'm sorry, I thought we were
finished. Very good. Last two, please.
Are Ranfis Villatoro and Melody Baldini.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Okay.
I guess we'll have staff come on back. Thank you. Thanks again. Commissioner Fish.
Thank you. Richard Whitman earlier, on behalf of DEQ, made an overture about the use of the VW settlement funds to help with some transition issues. Is that currently contemplated as part of any of the exhibits we have in front of us? And if not, what's your thinking about specifically directing staff to explore whether with DEQ and others, whether that could be a source of funding.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioner Fish. That is exactly what we've been doing over the last year, working with state legislatures, working with government affairs, and trying to coordinate a strategy across our regional jurisdictions so that we can all collectively, effectively advocate for those dollars in the 2019 session. And in fact, that's one of the reasons we wanted to bring this resolution before you today, to have a policy adopted so that when we go to the legislature next year, we can really make that case that those dollars need to be advocated for that purpose. We have met with state legislators. We've met with advocacy groups. We've looked at the settlement decree and what our options are under that. There's really a couple different pathways for which the legislature could direct funding to COVID firms. We feel very optimistic about the chances for that. It's directly in alignment with our state goals around supporting diverse and minority-owned businesses, as well as in alignment with the goals of the consent decree, which is really to reduce emissions from diesel pollution. So we feel pretty confident. We know there's a couple bills moving forward in the legislature, and they've included, at least they've let us know they intend to include that language in those. And we are coordinating with government affairs across our jurisdictions to make sure that we're kind of going in with the same message there.
So based on that, I assume what you're saying is we don't need a specific directive in the resolution before us. This is already ongoing work.
Correct.
I was just going to add there was a specific directive in the resolution in September for us to do just that. And that is
in September?
Yes. Yeah. And so that is still binding, so to speak.
Yeah. And I'll also note you're going to see the legislative agenda, I guess, tomorrow. And so that this is included there.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Any further questions? Very good. Thank you to our team, and thank you to everybody who testified today. Carla?
So I have a comment.
Commissioner Fritz.
Mayor, you are in charge of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, the Portland Housing Bureau, and Procurement Services. So you can direct your bureaus to come back to council with a resolution that would actively with their financial analysis and exempt the Housing Bureau. I would like to delete the paragraph that says the Housing Bureau is exempt without having any evidence to support that, and make it so that they have to make the case to be exempt rather than that somebody else has to make the case to be out, because we did hear testimony today that they should not be exempted until they've proven otherwise.
There's a motion.
Second.
We have a second. Call the roll. Commissioner Udaly, I'm sorry.
No, I was just trying to...
Call the roll on the amendment, please.
So the motion is
clarify something?
The motion is to delete the paragraph about exempting the Housing Bureau.
So Commissioner Fish.
So just to clarify, the be it further resolved, which is third from the end, actually also contains the directive to come back in July 2019. So right. What I understand you're doing is just simply striking the exemption.
No, I'm saying that the mayor doesn't need the council to direct him to do that. There's clearly an incentive for the Housing Bureau to do it. So rather than monkeying with the wording of this paragraph, we will expect to see that as soon as they can bring it, if they would like to.
Okay.
We have a motion. We have a second. Please call the roll.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye. Thank you.
Fish?
I'll tell you why I'm going to support this. I think it's six of one, half dozen of the other, and you could say potato or potato. But Commissioner Fritz is also there's an underlying values proposition that, as she was articulating this earlier, I started to think about. We already, as a matter of policy, say that our public investment in affordable housing has to be green. We already say that we have to build in areas of high opportunity. We already say that the people who build our housing have to be able to make a living wage. What we're now saying is that there's a public health concern that may also have a cost implication. But I think it's appropriate, based on the testimony we've received today, to consider that in whether you opt in or opt out, because that's what we're essentially doing. That there's still an opportunity for council to create an exemption. It's just that it's not a blanket exemption awaiting a report. We're flipping it. I think it's appropriate from the point of view that we have a proud tradition of identifying Portland values, which do have an impact in the short term on cost, although in the long term, we actually think there's some cost savings because of synergies and other opportunities. When you build in high opportunity areas, kids get to go to high opportunity schools and they learn better, and families are stronger as a result. So On that basis, I'm going to support the amendment. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Wheeler?
First of all, let me just say I've already checked with our staff. They can work with it either way. As Commissioner Fish said, it's a question of opt-in or opt-out. My initial reaction to this when I heard it was to respect the work of the staff. They had spent considerable amounts of time with the Housing Bureau, and the concern was we just did not have the data to be able to definitively say one way or the other. And as everybody up here is aware, the margins on affordable housing are extremely narrow. And so we chose instead to build our framework based on other policies the City Council has previously adopted around green building codes. So that was the theory, was we would come back in July with the data in hand, and we would be able to have that conversation with the council at that time. Given that my staff says that we can work with this framework, I'm happy to vote aye. The amendment is adopted. Now to the main motion is adopted. Is there any further discussion or questions? Please call the roll.
Udaly?
Well, first I want to thank everyone who worked on this item, and I especially want to thank the community advocates who have urged us to take action on this, in particular Mary Pavito and everyone who's in this room today. I mentioned that the City Club released what I think is their first report on air pollution in Portland in 1955. That was at least 15 years before they started admitting women to the City Club. This is just to illustrate.
You were demonstrating outside, though. I have a distinct recollection.
I was born in 1970, but I'd love to take credit for that. I was there in spirit. It's just, you know, to illustrate how long we've known about this. You know, I just deeply regret that we haven't made this move decades sooner, or at least before this current housing boom. There's something particularly egregious to me, knowing that at a time where Portland has become increasingly unaffordable to perhaps the majority of our residents, they've also been experiencing increased air pollution and adverse health effects to the tune of, well, in across Oregon, $3 billion a year, and over 400 premature deaths a year, which is just heartbreaking for me. So it's hard for me to care about cost uncertainty in the industry, to be honest, in light of that $3 billion and 400 lives price tag. I agree with some of the advocates here. I'd like to see all of this accelerated. I wasn't prepared to offer amendments today, but let's not lose sight of this and come back to it if we think we need to get more aggressive. Before I cast my vote, I just wanted to read a little passage from that City Club report from 1955 in regards to the state attitude toward municipal control. Then this is Oregon, obviously. The state authority believes that the larger cities of the state should conduct their own air pollution control because there are so many sources of air pollution within a large city that regulation can only be done effectively by a city agency. And skipping to the end of this section, they say, when sources of air pollution located outside the city of Portland are contributing to air pollution within the city, it is the policy of the state authority to assume responsibility for the control and to coordinate its efforts with the municipal program. So I just really implore our state legislature to do that. It's really inexcusable how poor our air quality is here. So with that, I happily vote aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Lester Spittler, Stacey Foreman from Procurement Services, Kyla Diesner from the Bureau of Planning Sustainability for spearheading this work. Really great work. Thank you, Kevin Downing, for your partnership over many years. Thank you, Mary Pivito and Neighbours for Clean Air for your community leadership and all the folks that you've brought along, including me. This is another step in the right direction towards reducing harmful diesel pollution in our region. Let's be very clear. The cities are going to have to save the United States from making climate disruption even worse.
and we need to do as much as we can, as quickly as we can, while at the same time not overreaching. And so I'm heartened by the testimony that says we're not doing enough, and also by that that says, yes, this is doable. We need to do doable. And so that is, I think that you've struck the right place. I'm happy that we are going to discuss as to whether to include to exempt the Portland Housing Bureau. The construction of affordable housing should not expose the environmental justice communities we're focusing on serving to diesel pollution. They are already disproportionately harmed, as has been said, by exposure to diesel particulate matter. Thank you, Office of Government Relations, for lobbying for the Oregon Volkswagen Settlement Funds and for putting this on our state agenda. If we're unsuccessful, we need to look for other funding sources to support these firms, because we need to get it done. Thank you to Cynthia Castro and my staff for her help preparing me for this hearing. Aye.
Fish.
Well, first, Mayor, as Commissioner Fritz pointed out, the three bureaus that have the lead in today's hearing all report to you. So first, thank you for your leadership. Thank you to the three bureaus, Procurement Services, Planning and Sustainability, and the Housing Bureau for their work. This has been an extraordinary week. I don't remember a week in which we've had more meaty, substantive issues before the council, and we've been in council a lot this week. In fact, if we're here another 10 minutes, I think we qualify for overtime. But it's been a busy week, and an all-star lineup today in terms of the presentation. So, you know, I tend to increasingly see things through a cup-half-full rather than a cup-half-empty narrative. And I think we have a tendency in public policy these days, because we're destabilized by what's going on in Washington, we're uncertain about our future, and we're experiencing enormous growing pains, is that each time we put in place some new policy, particularly one that's pioneering, we bemoan the fact that it didn't happen sooner, or it's taken so long, or some other qualification. I would prefer to focus on the fact that we are teeing up and addressing very compelling community concerns. We're doing so in a thoughtful way. We are having a unusually rational debate by the standards of the federal government in terms of how we discuss these things, and it's in a civil setting. And I'm proud to be in a council that is systematically taking on some tough issues and laying the groundwork in a collaborative way, and more often than not in lockstep with the county, towards goals that we share. So I think that's worth celebrating, and this has been a week where we've done a lot of good work that I'm very proud of, including today's action. Aye.
Saltzman.
I want to thank all the bureaus and the mayor for their leadership on this, but I especially want to thank once again Kevin Downing, Mary Pepito for her leadership, and Neighbors for Clean Air for their outstanding leadership. And I think it's been, I think Dr. Lewis stated, and I think Kevin said it as well, diesel's been around a long time, but it's only recently that we've really begun to understand the profound impacts of the fine particulates on our health. So it's no longer just the visible annoyance of diesel fumes and soot. It's really the profound impacts it can have on all of us. So it's incumbent upon us to act and act decisively. It's incumbent upon us to act, as it is really appalling how our federal government seems to really, and our president in particular, seems contemptuous of fundamental environmental laws around clean air, clean water, and hazardous waste. And it's only makes me wish as many resorts were located near rail yards. Then maybe we'd see some profound change at the national level. But until then, cities, counties, and oftentimes we can get the state to come along too, but cities and counties are increasingly the leadership and focal point for decisive action for clean air, clean water, and reducing hazardous waste. Please to vote aye.
Wheeler.
Well, thank you all, and I agree with Commissioner Fish. This has been a prolific and even a fun week. We really have gotten a lot done, and I've enjoyed the testimony, and I've enjoyed the discussions that we've had here. So thank you all for that. I appreciate all of the support that this policy has received, and I want to thank and acknowledge that we've heard from many people in the community who are concerned that while this standard is an important step in the right direction, we heard from several people today who said it did not go far enough. And I just want to remind people that first steps seldom complete any journey. I want to assure you that our work to improve air quality for Portlanders does not end with this resolution. City staff is going to continue to engage with our regional partners to ensure that we implement this policy fully and encourage other entities to adopt the standard so that we can have an even greater impact on reducing diesel emissions from construction projects all across our region. I'm open to exploring potential programmatic options such as incentives that could encourage contractors to voluntarily upgrade or retrofit their equipment sooner than the phase-in schedule currently requires. We'll also be continuing to work on our own city fleet to ensure our equipment meets the highest standards for diesel emission control. And finally, we are advocating that the state legislature allocate funding from the Volkswagen settlement to support COBID firms to comply with the standard, and are working with our regional partners to dedicate funding towards a regional implementation program. As you know, one of the priorities for my administration is ensuring that we have a supply of safe and affordable housing options that are available to all Portlanders. It's important that we decide based on the best available data so we can continue to work towards that goal while meeting the objectives of this policy. I look forward to bringing a resolution back to the full council per the amendment offered by Commissioner Fritz. We've heard from many community advocates about the serious impact of diesel emissions on public health and the need for our city to take action. I'm glad that we're now introducing this standard, which will help improve air quality for all Portlanders, and by doing so, advance equity and our climate action goals. And I was very pleased that several people who provided testimony today reminded us about the important threat to public health created by diesel particulates. It's notable that the World Health Organization just declared mayors doctors of cities. This is my first honorary doctorate. This wouldn't have happened without people in the community pushing this to the forefront. Mary and others have been actively engaged in this for many, many years. And this has been at the forefront of concerns for the community. And I've attended many forums that were led by the community. And I just want to acknowledge this is not a top-down approach to addressing this critical issue. This is a bottoms-up community desire. And I think this has worked out exceptionally well to work with and partner with those who we serve to create policy that helps further the desires of the community. Finally, I just want to thank the folks in my office for helping to push this forward, Amanda and Amy and Michelle. Thank you all for your hard work on this. Amanda came to us through the Hatfield Fellows Scholarship Fellows Program. We have a bad habit of stealing those fellows because they turn out just to be such incredible contributors to the work we do here at City Hall. Amanda, thank you in particular for your great work on this. I'm very happy to vote aye. The resolution is adopted as amended. Thank you, everybody. And as Commissioner Fritz likes to say, and now for something completely different.